Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm the site's managing editor, Matt Goldberg, and with me today is associate editor, Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
Normally we record on Sundays to talk about that weekend's releases, and we will still be doing that. We will talk about The Amazing Spider-Man 2, but major Star Wars news broke when they announced the cast, the long-awaited cast for Star Wars Episode 7. And after covering this for what felt about, like, I don't know, the time between Revenge of the Sith until now, we now have it. And so we wanted to talk about it. There are things to talk about because speculation never really ends, does it, children?
No.
Never truly ends if we hold it in our hearts. Oh, sweet God. I'm trying to just stay in the moment, like, yay, something new, some hard news happened. No, like, and who came in for a reading, and who's been rumored, and who was on a plane in London, and oh, Mark Hamill's losing weight, and just tell me something. And they're like, R2-D2's in the movie, and we're just like, fuck, like, to me, that's not even news. That's like a giant middle finger to everyone.
It was like, big news, everyone. R2-D2's in the movie. It's like, really? Do you think that's going to make fans excited? A robot is back in the movie. Thanks, J.J. Abrams.
And yet, I was truly excited that they got Kenny Baker to come back to play R2-D2.
I was like, all right, fine. Well, speaking of speculation, when you wrote up the story, I went in the comments, and already someone was like, well, it doesn't specify that Kenny Baker is playing R2-D2. Maybe he could be playing blah, 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 blah. I was like, really? We're going to go there?
You want to take it there? Oh, my God. Yeah, when I looked in the comments, I just saw that somehow it had turned to talking about Marvel, which just made me sad. Somehow in the comments of a Star Wars section, they had turned the conversation to talking about Marvel
movies.
It always comes back to Marvel. Although now I want to go check into a Marvel thread and then see if they talk about Star Wars. Just because it all blends together in one horrible mishmash.
They've got the same daddy. It's Mickey Mouse.
Now they have the same daddy. They can all get along. In any event, it's good to know that there is a cast. It came together apparently very last.
In the movie.
There what?
It's good to know there are people in the movie.
Yes, that's a good step. And I'm trying to be positive. I really am, but. And I feel bad that I'm defaulting to cynical and negative. It's not entirely my fault. There were three movies that guided me towards this. Three and a half if you count Return of the Jedi, which I think is only half of a good film.
Yeah.
I know that some people think that's blasphemous, but I think all the shit on Endor is really boring. Sorry. But I still want these movies to be good. Obviously, I want these movies to be good because I'm going to be covering them constantly. And when you cover a film constantly, you want it to pay off. But, I mean, Adam, let me ask you this. They're about to start filming. They're basically, doesn't filming start like on Monday?
it starts in a week or two, somewhere around there.
Do you think it would have been better if we knew who the cast was a few months ago? Because Abrams has been attached to direct for over a year. Now, obviously, you know, they had Michael Arndt's script, and they're like, no, let's tear it up, throw it out. And then
they spent an entire year working on Arndt's script and then threw it out. So essentially, from what we've heard, which is, I mean, it's been very solid rumor-wise, they've all kind of panned out, is that back in, July, August, they tossed Arndt's script. So they've really only been working on the story they're doing now for however many months that's been. That's not a long time to be prepping whatever they're doing now.
Right. I mean, just be from the script level. And then when you get to pre-production.
Sure.
To have that level. And then now we're all just sort of,
That's par for the course for franchise filmmaking.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they already know from the beginning, they know what the set pieces are going to be. They've started breaking those set pieces down. So, you know, they're already developing that. The visual effects teams are already working on stuff. That's why they have sets built and everything. So that's, I mean, most big franchise films have a screenwriter on set, which I assume Lawrence Kasdan is going to be there every day for filming since he was in the photo as well. Changing things on the day, tweaking stuff in the script while they're working.
do you think there's going to be lightsabers? Let's speculate. I sure hope so. I like lightsabers.
Yes.
Yeah, but, I mean, from the script perspective, and then we're just sort of guessing at what the plot might be, we seem to have a sense of what happened, even though, again, official confirmation, you're never going to get it until they tell you directly. And even then, with J.J. Abrams, it's going to be the drips and drabs of, don't you want to see inside my mystery box? And we're like, fuck you, go shove your ass in your fucking mystery box, just fuck you. And just this upset, it's like you missed light, you missed your calling as a marketing guru and somehow became a film director. But aside from that, if you want to go with speculation, it seems like the word is that they changed the script to focus more on,
the original trio.
The original trio. And what's funny is, I think, was it Abrams or Kasdan? Someone said, like, we want to send them off the right way, but they still wouldn't confirm that the actors were back. Wasn't there, like, I think someone along the line said, like, we want to give them a send-off. Like, we want to give them the send-off they deserve. Because I remember hearing that, and I'm like, wasn't that Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, do we need another send-off in, you know, this rebooted 30 years later franchise? But again, we don't know.
We don't know.
And this kind of goes back to, I mean, I think what you were getting at when you asked is, would it have been nice to have the cast months ago is, you know, on these big movies, a lot of big movies, the cast is set early and they spend months and months and months in preparation, you know, physical training, knowing what they need to know, getting ready, getting inside the character. And some of these people, as today the Hollywood Reporter had a whole breakdown of how the casting came together, and even like people like Oscar Isaac, he wasn't even solidly in the movie until earlier this month. Same with John Boyega. I think the earliest was Daisy Ridley back in February for this new batch. So these newcomers have not been set for a long time. But the original trio, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, have basically, they told us they were in it, like, that was like a year ago, wasn't it? They knew that they were going to be in it a long time ago.
Right. And the thing is they probably had the leeway to do it, because, like, what are you going to fucking do? Recast us? Ha 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 ha.
Sure,
no.
But these big, I mean, this is a giant movie. The production is going to last a long way. I think it's May until September or something. So, I mean, people are complaining, you know, these actors don't have a lot of time to prepare, but it would make sense to me if this first bulk of filming, this first batch of filming, has to deal with the original trio. And maybe the newcomers are not in it a lot at this beginning filming. So,
sure,
yes,
but this is also based on the assumption that they're just going to slide back into those characters, and that, like, no, like, it just, they'll just fit like a glove. And,
sure,
like,
but what I'm saying is they've been preparing for it for like a year, as opposed to, like, you know, Oscar Isaac, who found out yesterday he was in the movie.
Well, they've been preparing on what, though? Because the script has gone through. I mean, have they been?
Sure, but
what,
just, I mean, I'm sure they've been in discussions with JJ and physical preparation. And I mean, you're right. Maybe, like, they didn't know that they were going to have as big of a role until, like, last fall. But still, that's more time than these other
than others, where they're just, which is still somewhat disconcerting. Which is sort of like, don't worry, we'll take over, and you guys can find your character in the background.
Yeah,
as we do,
like,
our
I've
thing.
I've known I've been playing the Star Wars villain for less than a month, but I'm on set now playing this villain, so
I'm on set.
Hopefully I'm doing good.
I'll have to figure it out as I go along. Just, what a weird thing. It's like, it's okay, Carrie Fisher will take lead here, and I'll just follow.
Sure.
I'll just stay back. Andy Serkis has had a bigger career currently than Carrie Fisher.
Yeah,
in terms of being
writing,
on screen,
though.
She's been writing, exactly. But that's what I'm saying in terms of working on screen, on set. Now, obviously, at some point, acting is acting, and you know how to do it. But this is a very different game. They're going to walk onto a very different set. Now, again, like, Harrison Ford was like an Ender's Game. Like, he knows how. Harrison Ford knows how things work. It's not like they're all going to be like, why are all these screens green?
Harrison Ford sleepwalking through roles since 1999.
Oh, God.
What?
That's
what
the thing. And see, that's what I'm so... That's where my cynicism comes back, and I try not to voice it, but, like, you know, you, dear listener, will hear it, which is, yeah, this is who I really wanted to see Han Solo grow into, a curmudgeon.
What if cameras roll on day one and, you know, like Mark Hamill's like back in Luke Skywalker gear and he's got the lightsaber and it just sucks? What if it's just terrible and JJ's like, oh no, what do I do? Like these,
what have I
these
done?
Old people do, I can't do it. They don't look good. They can't convincingly play these characters anymore.
Exactly. And that was the concern. Like, here at the end of the day, there are things about the prequel trilogy that kind of slip into the original trilogy. Like, you kind of just have to grit your teeth a little bit. It's like, okay, Darth Vader was an irritating little kid who missed his mom, and there's midichlorians now, whatever the fuck those are, and okay, Darth Vader also built 3PO for some reason, okay, wow. But you sort of push out of your mind. Now, if their performances are bad, you have to push that out of your mind when you see the original trilogy, because they're going to grow into just awful people.
Well, like, with you just saying this now, I'm now remembering back that, like, performances have never been the Star Wars franchise's strong suit. Even in the original trilogy, no one, I mean, obviously Harrison Ford is fantastic as Han Solo, but, you know.
I think they're good for what they need to be. Like, in the thing, tonally, they fit. Now, perhaps as audiences, we demand a different kind of performance now, but, you know, I would say, yes, there's a reason that Harrison Ford broke out, but Mark Hamill was that, like, gee willikers, whiny farm boy that still, you know, was endearing. These performances, had these actors been annoying, people wouldn't have come back. People didn't come back just for the effects or for Harrison Ford. It all worked. And that's not to say, you know, will they be able to perform at the level of Olivier when they return? Does that matter? But at the same time, there is, things change, performances, actors change, and it's just like finding a character again after so many years. Let me ask you this. When Harrison Ford returned to play Indiana Jones in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, how did you feel?
I thought it was fine. I mean,
me
that,
too.
That movie,
he was
that
fine.
Movie itself is not a very, it doesn't really feel like an Indiana Jones movie. It feels like going through the motions. And so I guess his performance kind of fit that. I didn't feel like he was sleepwalking through it. Like, he.
No, I felt like he was having fun with it, which is good. But at the same time, I feel he wanted to make that film.
Yeah,
I feel that he
very,
and Lucas pressured Spielberg into making that film.
Yeah, he's been very vocal about the fact that he would love to go back and do another Indiana Jones. Like, he's super, like, he really wants to do another Indiana Jones. He loves that character, but he just wants to see Han Solo die. I haven't heard him be enthusiastic about, like, oh,
Han Solo is supposed to die in Return of the Jedi.
Sure,
the
yeah.
And
maybe that's how he agreed to sign on in this quote-unquote gigantic role that was Variety or Deadline. Deadline, when they broke some rumors the night before the official casting came out, said that Harrison Ford has a quote-unquote gigantic role in this movie. Maybe JJ's giving him his wish and he gets a death scene. So maybe that'll motivate him to, you know, act.
You know, here's the thing, though, about Harrison Ford. I mean, in some roles, he's been sort of like the angry curmudgeon, but there have been other roles where it seems like he's kind of having fun. Like, there's some roles where it's like, yes, you're phoning it in. But then there are other times, like, Cowboys and Aliens has a lot of problems, but I think in Cowboys and Aliens, he's at least kind of having fun. I think in Ender's Game, he's kind of going into it, but then there are others where it's like, can I just have my paranoia paycheck? Thank you. And leave.
Like, sure. Well, he's a guy that, what I like about Harrison Ford is that he just doesn't give a shit. Like, acting was never his passion. He was a carpenter. And so he does it as a job, and he has fun sometimes as a job. Sometimes you get really great performances like The Fugitive and stuff like that. And Witness, and, you know, I feel like he's doing what he's doing. Like, he's never been super passionate about, like, let me give this great, fantastic performance. Yeah. He does what he's called to do.
Right, he's very workman, very blue-collar about it, almost. And, you know, it's something where you and I admire it, but imagine you're, like, a diehard Star Wars fanboy, and it's like, this is a guy who said he didn't care if Han shot first. He said he doesn't give it. He really.
I don't know, and I don't care.
Exactly, which is sort. You know, it's funny. Is there are some let me, by comparison, like, there's some actors who just feel very close to their characters. Like, I think if you were to ask Hugh Jackman, it's like, what do you think about, you know, having bone claws and X-Men Days? Like, he'd give you a real answer. Like, he's like, I really care and I feel passionately about this. Now, and I mean, these, and Harrison Ford's like, no, I don't give a shit. It's a fake fucking world.
This isn't real, guys.
It's goddamn fiction, you assholes. Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, he's an old guy.
That's kind of how I'm approaching this, because I'm not a Star Wars fanatic. I mean, I loved the movies as a kid. I liked them fine as an adult. I didn't feel any sort of, like, affront at the prequels when they came out. They came out when I was younger, so I was like, eh, they're not good, but it's fine. Like, it's not going to upset me. So when this cast was announced, and I'm just not, in like, emotionally invested in Star Wars.
Yeah, not none of us are.
Yeah, so I mean
interested. None of us, neither. I mean, neither you nor I. I don't want to say the world at large is not invested in Star Wars.
So it's almost kind of a morbid curiosity to see Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford come back into the roles. But I as a film fan, I'm genuinely excited about the rest of the cast, like the newcomers that they brought on. I think that I mean, that is what gets me excited for this movie.
So let's talk about the newcomers then. That was, I was very excited for it, and yet the cynic, and see, this makes me so bad, but I will be honest with you people who are listening, because you take the time to listen to the podcast rather than shoot out an asshole comment in the comment section, so I will be more honest with you, not that I'm dishonest with them, but laying it all out, I look at this cast, I'm like, this is a great cast. That's fantastic. We could have said the exact same thing in 1998 when Natalie Portman and Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson were all coming on to that new Star Wars film. All three of them. And
then that exciting newcomer, Hayden Christensen.
Oh, that fresh face newcomer. Now, to be fair, George Lucas was running the casting on that.
Yeah.
George Lucas is a guy whose big acting direction is faster, more intense. That's how he works with actors. J.J. Abrams, on the other hand, is very, very good at casting.
I think we cannot deny the importance of Kathleen Kennedy here. She's the head of Lucasfilm. She's producing this movie. She is essentially taking the George Lucas role, because, you know, I mean, obviously George Lucas didn't direct all the Star Wars movies. He produced the others, and so I feel like that's Kennedy's role in this, and she is a dynamite producer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, again, it's something where you are getting these great actors, but you have someone to also guide them to maybe get better performances out of them. So that's a relief. And again, and when I say, like, the casting, and we're talking about Hayden Christensen, right now your wild card is Daisy Ridley, who no one knew about, and we're just sort of like, her acting reel was online, and they're like, fuck, pull that down, because I think they want to, like, just have her sort of be as much of a surprise as possible. You know, she's been in TV episodes. It's not like she wasn't plucked out of nothing. Oh, hey, remember that nationwide casting search? How'd that pan out?
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
to be
like
fair,
that.
It feels like they looked at a lot of people. But
oh, they have. They looked at everyone.
J.J. Abrams is notorious for being indecisive. And in THR's kind of, like, rundown of how this casting process went and how he kept it secret, it said that he began meetings as early as last August, but the first actor, one of the first leads to be chosen, was Daisy Ridley in February. Like, he didn't make a final decision on any of the new coming casts until this February.
Right. I mean, Saoirse Ronan said, she told everyone, everyone is reading for this film.
Yeah.
Which, to me, made the casting story so frustrating. You know, like, I mean, the casting rumors, it's like, sure, why not? I mean,
yeah
this guy's
Zac
probably
Efron
reading for it.
For, to read for it. I mean,
I'm sure Gary Oldman probably went in for, yeah, I mean, yeah, they all went in. I'm sure Jesse Plemons, you know, he was in, and then maybe J.J. Abrams changed his mind, you know, it's...
And at the end of the day, you get a call saying, hey, would you like to read for the next Star Wars movie? I don't care who you are, you say, yes, please.
Right, and you're like...
That would be interesting.
Yeah, the guy who's, I'm going to play hard to get on the new Star Wars film.
Yeah,
no, I mean, I almost, though, have to wonder if they had to, for the younger actors, it makes sense. Like, this is a big breakthrough thing.
Sure.
But I wonder if they actually had to go out, like, did they actively go after Andy Serkis. Like, we have a mocap.
So. The THR report mentions Kathleen Kennedy's relationship with him because she produced Adventures of Tintin. She was, if you don't know, she's been Steven Spielberg's producer for ages and ages. Started as his assistant way back when he was like doing Jaws. So she's been with him forever. Not anymore because she's running Lucasfilm now. But she had the relationship with Andy Serkis, and I guess she suggested his name to J.J. Abrams. And some people have asked me, like, what are the chances he's going to play a motion capture character? And I'm like, you don't hire the world's greatest living mocap performer to play, like, a council member or something in Star Wars. Like, it's Star Wars.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I'm willing to float that out there just because to be on the safe side. Like, I know. Like, I can't. Neither of us can say definitively 100%. But I'm willing to say 99.
No, but yeah, I mean, it's Star Wars. There are going to be creatures. You know, technology has advanced as such to where mocap's the thing. You hire Andy Serkis. He's phenomenal. Like, he is the pioneer of motion capture performance. If you hire him, he's and he doesn't only play one role. Like, in the Apes movies, he played multiple apes. So, you know, he could also have a live-action role, whatever. But, again,
right.
Speculation.
Although, you know, what did... I have not read this THR article yet, but did they say, like, what this does now to The Jungle Book? Because he was set to direct that.
No, they haven't said. So, I mean, it could be one of those things. And again, we don't know how big these roles are. I mean, Andy Serkis could be in and out of Star Wars in a month. Like, he could have his filming done in a month and a half. And if he's just an actor, he can be prepping Jungle Book while he's acting in this. I know multiple other kind of like actor-directors do the same thing. So it's entirely possible that he shoots his scenes in a month, 2 months, or maybe he's running Jungle Book out of London, so it's the same place. Either way, I mean, I think Warner Brothers knows that Disney's Jungle Book is going first because they have the 2015 release date. Jon Favreau's already started casting. Like, it's they know they've lost the race to get out first. So I think right now they're just focused on getting it made.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's. Obviously, yeah, the Star Wars takes priority over everything. But, again, when I think about the casting of Andy Serkis, who, in terms of, like, star power of, like, these newcomers, yeah, Andy Serkis isn't, like, he's a household name among geeks, but, like, your parents may not know who he is, unless your parents are also geeks. But when I look at this casting, I just... These are really good actors. But the thing that amazes me, and we were talking about this on the phone after they were cast, was how well they kept this secret for so long. Yeah. Not even in terms of whispers. Like, that's the thing. It's one thing that, like, Abrams hadn't confirmed casting. Like, it's one thing to be like, oh, he settled on someone. But John Boyega was really the one who was out in front the most. And even that was only, like, 6 weeks ago for the
and
first
Adam
time
Driver.
Adam Driver was a while ago. That's true. Adam Driver was
he was basically the first, like, there had been whispers, but this was the first time that a trade didn't say, like, went in for a meeting. They said Adam Driver is in early negotiations to play a villain in Star Wars.
Right.
Like, that's
so
the first time
the
a trade felt confident enough to say, you know, this isn't going to blow back in our face.
Yeah, which is exciting, because when you have someone as indecisive as Abrams saying, this guy is so good, I have to get him now.
Yeah.
And you and I are Adam Driver fans.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're like, awesome. But yeah, most of these cast members just completely flew under the radar. Daisy Ridley, Donald Gleason, Andy Serkis, Oscar Isaac, and Max von Sydow. Like, that is fantastic. That's in terms of keeping a secret inside the mystery box, kudos, Mr.
Yeah.
Abrams.
Secret, and also these are, like, really talented actors. There's no one that that you could say, like, if Zac Efron was in this, I would be on board with it because I'm a Zac Efron fan. I think he's talented, but I think a lot of people would see that as a studio picking a name that's going to bring in X amount of people no matter what, because it's a name that the youngsters like and will come in. This is very much a cat. Like, my mom was asking me, oh, who's in the new Star Wars? And I was like, the original people? I don't think you know anyone else. Like,
did you see Inside Llewyn Davis?
Yeah, no. Or, you know, Donald Gleason. These are
or
a lot
About
of
Time.
Yeah. And it's also, it's not a thing where it's like a bunch of like newcomers that no one knows who they are. It's one, and then a bunch of people that are on the cusp of superstardom. Like
John
Boyega broke out big with Attack the Block. Everyone, I mean, granted, it's been a few years since Attack the Block.
But he's been working steadily. Like, sure, that's the thing. No one's forgotten John Boyega.
Yeah, but everyone's been waiting for the big break. But like Adam Driver has just started to really break out. Donald Gleason, because he just had his first leading role in About Time, and he was fantastic in that.
And Isaac. Yeah, and then he followed up with Frank, and he was also Bill Weasley, and he works pretty steadily. But no, you're right, he's about to break out. Oscar Isaac, definitely a lot of heat coming off Inside Llewyn Davis.
Sure, yeah. So it's not like they didn't go complete unknown for most of the cast, but they didn't go for like household names. They went for
not familiar with this Max von Sydow cast. Yeah, yeah. He seems pretty fresh faced. Don't know how he'll handle the Hollywood machine.
Hopefully he doesn't die before filming starts.
Don't say that. That's horrible. He is 85, but he seems to be in pretty good health.
Sure, and it is an interesting casting because this movie takes place 30 years after Return of the Jedi, so, you know, by the law of ages, he was around when the original trilogy was happening, so how does his character fit into everything else?
He was Grand Moff Tarkin's brother. What?
I don't know the words you just said.
Grand Moff Tarkin? You don't know?
No, I don't know.
Grand Moff? Oh gosh, I'm the big Star Wars nerd here. Grand Moff Tarkin is the old guy who runs the original Death Star.
Okay.
Yeah.
Old British guy.
Old British guy. Just, they're all old British guys. All old British guys. That's, everyone in the film is an old British guy. Andy Serkis is mo-capping an old British guy. Yeah, so it's exciting, and I'm glad that they have good actors, and like I'm really hoping that this works out better than episode one, where it was just like, yeah. But then the other thing to talk about is, and something that people mentioned when the cast was announced, is that still only one new female role, and that's a little, for some, that was kind of disappointing when you consider that that feels a little outdated to have only one new female character when you would hope that time has progressed. Now, we're assuming the size of the role is based on the size of which the names were listed.
The order in which they're listed.
Exactly, order. So John Boyega, the first name listed, would have the biggest role of the newcomers. So that's exciting. If, you know, he, you know, have he's British. That wasn't him putting on an accent. So he's African British, correct?
Sure, yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's African British. So to have, like, you know, a black actor at the forefront of a Star Wars film is pretty cool. And I'm sort of curious about how large the, we don't know how big Daisy Ridley's role is. If it's a love interest, or how that's going to work out. Like, again, there's so much unknown. And it's a little disappointing because it sounded like in Michael Arndt's script, from what we knew, the lead character was a woman, which was surprising. Like, I think like Chloe Grace Moritz was like briefly mentioned for a hot minute,
yeah,
or hot Ronan. Second,
yeah.
Saoirse Ronan. Like, but that kind of young actress to take that role, which would have been cool. And that's the thing, it's when I start talking, when I say this thing out loud, it sounds like crazy talk because I'm speculating on a story I know almost nothing about. Like, just because based on optics, like, oh, that would have been cool. But was the Michael Arndt script well written? We don't know.
We would assume so.
We would assume.
He has an Oscar, and he carries the highest quote of any screenwriter in Hollywood right now. So
we would assume. Yeah, Toy Story is... Like, he has an Oscar for Toy Story, Toy Story 3, but at the same time, like, we all know how...
No, he has an Oscar for Little Miss Sunshine.
I thought he got it for Toy Story 3.
Maybe he got both of them. Toy Story 3 won for Best Animated Feature, not Screenplay.
Okay, so he got it for Little Miss Sunshine,
yeah.
Which...
But he wrote Toy Story 3.
Okay. Little Miss Sunshine, very good script. It is a good script. It's not a script that blows me away. I would say that the Oscar pedigree is good. I would also point out that Akiva Goldsman has an Oscar. So, yeah. Screenplays are tricky. I would hope that it's good. I mean, it's good that they hired, let's say, Michael Arndt as opposed to Skip Woods.
Sure. Well, and Michael Arndt was on it before Lucasfilm to Disney, so he was already working on the outline based on George Lucas.
I wonder how he feels.
This is what I want more than anything in the world. What I want more than to see Star Wars Episode 7 is to read the tell-all book about all this shit that went down. Like, I want the timeline starting with just before Lucas sold to Lucasfilm to, like, the release of Star Wars 7. I want to know about the director search. I want to know about the supposed infighting between Abrams and Kennedy. That's so fascinating to me.
Oh, I totally agree. You will not get that until maybe ever, because now the Star Wars... Because even after Episode 9... By the way, a part of myself just died inside having said the words Episode 9. It continues. It never ends, because the spinoffs.
Yeah.
They're the spinoffs. Oh, my goodness. I just... No. Because that's the next casting we'll report on. It won't be for Episode 8. The spinoff is supposed to come before... Episode 8.
We'll see.
But I'm talking, we'll see. But based on the timeline that Alan Horn has laid out, they want a spinoff in between the proper sequels.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
But yeah, going back to your one female comment, it is disconcerting that there is only one new female in this cast. And yes, there have been reports that there is still casting left to do. Some say there's one major female role left to fill. Some say that female role is more of a supporting role. Either way, this table read happened. So as Matt was saying before we started this podcast, how big of a role can it be, this unknown female role that hasn't been filled yet, if the actor wasn't or actress wasn't there at the table read?
Right. This almost come out feels like someone doing damage control. To say,
sure,
like, someone responding and saying, oh, no, there's another female role. And I'm like, okay.
Well, and
is it like an Aunt Beru level role?
Well, and it feels like they may have announced this cast a bit prematurely, because the rumors had started getting out of control. The night before the cast was announced, everyone assumed that the cast was going to be announced on May 4th.
May
the first day. We don't know if that was supposed to be the case or not. There's no confirmation. But the night before the official cast was released, Deadline ran a pretty strict report. This was coming out a week after Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher had been photographed in London. And everyone was like, oh, I wonder what they're doing there. And then Deadline had a report saying, you know, they're in. Here's who else we're hearing. They dropped Oscar Isaac's name, John Boyega's name. So it felt like maybe Abrams was like, enough. Like, I don't want any more leaks, any more speculation. We list who we have cast now, and then we fill the rest later and let them out. So we'll see. I would hope that there's another major female lead, because at the end of the day, like, there's no way there's not going to be some sort of romance. It's Star Wars. It's, you know, high fiction. And if there's only one female newcomer, she's got to be someone's love interest, which is a little... I wish there was another buffer there, someone else there.
Yeah, that's... Again, and it feels like the complication here is the complication with any Star Wars film period, which is, in some ways, it's an unenviable task, you know, to even take this job. Like, with Star Trek, when Abrams took Star Trek was pretty dormant. Like, and Star Trek has its fans, but not in the way that Star Wars has its fans. Star Wars is social lexicon. And there's still Star Trek terms that you can leak, you can get out there. But Star Wars is, like, it has a hook in a way that the weight of it is just heavier. With Star Trek, it's like, let's do a reboot. All right. And that's the thing. You're already starting from scratch. He has to build off of shit that came before.
Yeah.
He can't cast a new Han Solo.
Yeah.
So now he's in this position.
That will happen eventually. If our civilization has not ruined itself in the next 100 years, there will be a remake of Star Wars.
Yes, and the Futurama head of J.J. Abrams in the glass jar will still direct.
No, it'll be Jon Favreau. That's when Jon Favreau gets his chance.
That's when
he finally gets to direct a Star Wars.
Everything's coming up, Favreau. Yeah, no, but that's the problem. So Abrams is in this position where how far can he really strike out on creating a new Star Wars movie? like, maybe that's what Michael Arndt wanted to do, like something really daring. And who is it that tells Abram, or is it Abrams himself, that says, maybe we should stick a little closer to what already came before? Because this is, to really give the original cast such large roles is pretty conservative.
Definitely. And that's not what I thought would happen at all. And again, if you know, the reports are to be believed, which, I mean, they've been corroborated a few times, that it's that Arndt's script was based off of what Lucas wanted, and Lucas wanted to move away from the original trio, and Abrams disagreed. Abrams basically kicked Arndt to the curb. And I thought, interestingly enough, when, you know, it was first announced, it was, you know, like, Abrams and Kasdan were taking over from Arndt, you know, based on a very strong screenplay from Arndt. In this official press release with the cast, it says screenplay by J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan. No mention of Michael Arndt. So
right.
you have to think that means that this is a significant departure from what Arndt was working on, which we are to assume is what Lucas wanted. Which is interesting that Lucas might have wanted a more liberal, something completely different, as opposed to what Abrams wants.
I think maybe Lucas was just like, leave it alone.
Yeah, I did like, what just, I did. Don't mess with my characters.
I did what I did. It's here's my. I still want money. I still want.
That's
Star
true. Maybe
Wars
it was to... like I gave them the send off. Why should you be the one to give them the send off?
Right, and so yeah, just sort of taking. Gosh, it's so tricky and. It will never end. Like, as we said at the beginning of the show, the speculation will never really end.
Nah.
Even when it ends, it doesn't really end, because as you were saying, it's like, now what happened behind the scenes?
That's what I'm most curious about.
That's what we want the most. We want the, like, the
give me the
warts
dirt.
And... Yeah, well, the thing is, and at that point, you kind of really want the films to be successful, because if they're successful, people are willing to be more open with what happens. Like, if you read, like, Star Wars, the annotated screenplays... You really sort of get a clearer picture of what was happening. Not a complete picture. There's still things that will leak out decades afterwards. Like, the producer on Empire Strikes Back pointing out basically how George Lucas got enamored with toys and wanted that Ewok should be a heavy presence in Return of the Jedi. Like, basically saying... revealing things that were kept under wraps for a while. Now, that being said, in the age of the internet, things move a lot faster, and it's much harder to keep information under wraps. And the things you're looking for, Adam, I'm sure they'll come to light one day, hopefully sooner rather than later. But for the meantime, all we can do is really...
just wait to see Abrams on the press junket duck the questions of, so how much did the script change from when you first signed on?
I don't know who's going to ask that question, Adam.
I wonder who would ask the question.
I don't think anyone's going to ask that question. I think that's just going to stay a mystery. And if he does get asked it, he will answer it candidly and directly.
Yeah, no, Abrams is the king at saying everything without saying anything at all. He's very, very good at... He has perfected the task of speaking without really saying anything.
Exactly.
He's good at dancing around the truth.
So he missed his calling not only as a head of marketing, but also as a politician.
Oh, I think he'd be a brilliant politician.
Yes.
Except for the fact that he's apparently just insanely indecisive.
Well, like I said, a brilliant politician.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, there's... we'll see how that pans out. It's frustrating, and the thing is on the one hand, like I mock his mystery box, and because I want to, and I think it's dumb. But on the other hand, let's say, like, even if he was very open about the production of Star Wars Episode 7, it would never be enough. Staying secret and being open. Some might argue, oh, there's a balance. There's a balance there that you have to strike. And if you give people just enough, they won't want to keep digging. Everyone's going to want to keep digging.
Yeah,
everyone's going to want as much of this movie as possible. until they're like, don't spoil it. I'm like, you just asked for all this shit.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation. It's
absolutely.
It's one of those things where I feel like his heart is in the right place. I understand what he's trying to do. I just feel like he goes about it in the wrong way. Like, Devin wrote a really good article about it the other day. It's about someone holding something behind their back and saying, I have something behind my back that you can't see. So all you ever want to do is look behind their back, which is essentially what Abrams does, and it creates this vacuum in which everyone just speculates wildly. But I understand that. I don't want to be spoiled on stuff like that, but... You know what? The marketing's going to do it anyway, as we've seen with Amazing Spider-Man 2 and basically everything that's come out. Even the great Nolan, the third act of his Dark Knight Rises was in plain view in those trailers. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. Especially with the Disney marketing machine behind you. You've seen how they market the shit out of those Marvel movies. They give, essentially, they show, like, scenes from almost the entire movie for those, so... Yeah.
And I don't understand it. You spoil something a year in advance, you spoil it a month in advance. It's spoiled.
Yeah,
in fact, it's almost better to spoil it a year in advance because then people will forget.
Yeah, you have the opportunity to forget about it, which has happened to me when I've read stuff before and then I forgot about it. It's so much worse when Disney is in the marketing glut, which you know they're going to do and you know they don't have to because it's Star Wars. You basically just, for a TV spot, just have the word Star Wars on the screen and say coming out. Whatever the date is, like December 18th.
Now, here's my ad for Star Wars Episode 7. It's one TV spot, and it says Star Wars Episode 7, whatever the subtitle is. Find the showtime on your own, asshole, because you're going to come see this anyway.
Yeah, fuck you, you're coming.
I'm not even going to tell you the date. You're going to have to find it out on your own. And you will find it out on your own because you want to go see Star Wars.
Yeah.
Fuck you. May the Force be with you, asshole.
I hope that Abrams is involved in the marketing and hopefully
he will be.
Yeah, I guess he was for Star Trek into
but then again, like, I mean, he was for Star Trek. That film also shows us the third act. That those trailers showed the Enterprise crashing into San Francisco, which is the end of the film.
Yeah, I don't understand that, and that's a recent thing because I can't think of an example in my head, but I know that a year or 2 years ago they weren't doing that. Like, I would go into a movie and be like, oh shit, like, this is all new. Like, I haven't seen a single image or anything from this. But now I go into a movie and I'm like, oh, yep, I've seen this environment before. I've seen this, seen that.
On the one hand, I'm sympathetic to... I recently became more sympathetic to the way trailers are made because I interviewed Richard Shepard for Dom Hemingway and I pointed out, like, oh man, one of the best jokes in the film is in the trailer. And he was like, yeah, but I had this thing with the Weinstein Company, and I guess they were Miramax at the time, but over the Matador. And they put what he felt was the best joke in the film in the trailer. And he said that to them. It's like, well, do you want people to come see your film? And for an indie film, that makes sense. Like, an indie film is a harder sell. But it's goddamn Star Wars.
Sure.
These are blockbuster films we're talking about. And I understand it's a crowded marketplace, and it's tough, but there has to be a way to get people in without showing them the third act.
Yeah.
There has to be a way.
And even in the Avengers, like, in all of those trailers was Hulk saving Iron Man. So the entire
wouldn't that have been such a cool thing to not know?
The entire emotional stakes were gone from that part of the movie. And it's become an arms race, like you said. Like the big budget movies... Like, just being a tentpole isn't enough anymore. Like, an $80 million, $70 million opening weekend is not enough because they're spending so much money on these, so they have to go that extra level to, like, nope, we know that everyone knows about Spider-Man 2, and a lot of people are going to see it, but we still have to do the marketing blitz to get as much as possible.
Right, because if they don't, it's not just... I mean, it's like what you said. It's not good enough to have $80 million or $90 million, because... that would be perceived as a failure.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider that the original Spider-Man back in 2002, without the benefit of 3D, crossed 100 million in 3 days.
Yeah. The first Spider-Man was what? I remember that number, 113 million stood for a long time. Like, that was...
Yep, it was the first film to ever cross 100 million in an opening weekend.
Yeah, that was a huge thing. And then we have the Avengers with 200 million.
Superheroes sell, man. I think they're going to keep making those movies.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
So how
probably.
Well will Star Wars do?
Exactly. That's the whole thing. And everything is stacked up against the previous one. And that's, I mean, it's a business. It's always been a business. They call it the industry for a reason. And the important thing to remember, though, is that these opening domestic weekend grosses are so fake to begin with.
Yeah.
It's an international marketplace. That's what's important. It's the worldwide gross. And even that's not the most important thing. You know where most of the money is going to come from on Star Wars Episode 7? The fucking toys.
Yeah.
This is a movie designed, it's not designed to sell toys, but it's going to sell a lot of fucking toys.
That does make me excited to see that Adam Driver is going to be an action figure now. I think that's fantastic.
You don't think they're going to make girls action figures?
they've only got one. Are they going to make like old Luke Skywalker and old Han Solo, like physically accurate to what Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill look like now?
I think their joints are going to move a little slower.
Yeah,
I think that's what's going to be. They're not going to be as flexible as the original. But I mean, it's these. Once you have a new character, you can just how many Star Wars versions of there are of a single character? Like there's the originals, and they just keep reissuing them. It's not just like one toy. It goes on forever, and that's the important thing to remember, unimportant thing to remember. Which is, as we can like, oh man, what's the story and who are they playing and all this? It's like, you know, what'll it make and what'll they show? It's like, from a financial perspective, Disney wants the goddamn toys.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the money comes from.
Film.
Right. That's the thing. But it's something that people may not think about. So I think that's just important to keep in mind.
No.
But like you, I think it's very cool. There will be an Adam Driver action figure. So yeah. Hooray.
And I am sincerely hoping for the best. I really hope
Oh yeah, neither one. Yeah, neither of us are just like,
I like this cast. I'm excited to see how it goes. I mean, how long do you think we can go before people start talking about Episode 8? Who's going to direct and which of the characters will die in this one and not make it? Probably be poor Donald Gleason.
Oh, I thought we were going to actually start talking about that now. I thought we were going to start talking about Episode 8 right now. Oh, shit. All right, well, that kills the rest of the show for me.
Kills that.
Do you want to talk about anything else, or just go straight to recommendations? By the way, people, I was joking. I have no desire to talk about Episode 8 whatsoever. Anything else we want to touch on for Star Wars? Or are you as exhausted with it as I am?
I'm trying to be satisfied with what we have now, this casting announcement. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop for some, like, the next whatever to hit, where it's like, all right, we got to live with this for the next whatever months, this kind of speculation.
I remember back before Episode 1 came out, and I was reading in a magazine, possibly Entertainment Weekly, about the character names, and it's like, Liam Neeson is playing a character named Qui-Gon Jinn. And it's like, ooh. And then years later, I reflect on, like, that means nothing.
Well, people are now analyzing the seating arrangements from that table read photo. They're like, well, John Boyega is sitting with Oscar Isaac, so what does that mean? I do understand that in table read, you know, you sit closer to the person who you have a lot of talk with, but I just thought that was funny that we're moving into, all right, let's zoom
it's
in
like,
on the...
It's like the Zapruder film.
Yeah.
You'll see that Oscar Isaac is sitting in the back and to the left.
Yeah.
Back and to the left. Okay. Recommendations, Adam?
Sure. Let's get
yes.
to it.
All right. What do you got for us?
I mean, a lot of these, like we said, a lot of these actors in this movie are kind of not so much newcomers, but on the cusp. So a lot of their kind of more notable works you're probably familiar with, but I'm going to go ahead and recommend a film that you no doubt heard about. It's Inside Llewyn Davis from last year, not only because Adam Driver and Oscar Isaac are both in it, but also because it's fantastic and no one saw it, and it made me sad. It's the Coen brothers' latest, and it's clearly in the vein of their other films. Oscar Isaac plays a folk singer in Greenwich Village in 1961, and it's an odd movie, which I guess is what you expect from Coen Brothers movies, but some people felt it was too mean-spirited or too kind of down, but it's got a really fascinating structure. It's got excellent music. The Coen Brothers don't cut around the songs. Each song is played in full in the movie, and Oscar Isaac is amazing in this movie. I mean, there are a lot of performances every year that get pointed out for being flashy or, you know, people losing weight and stuff like that, but this is a performance which an actor completely disappears into a role. so that to the fact that you are watching Llewyn Davis on screen, you're not watching Oscar Isaac. And Adam Driver, as with everything he's in, steals his scenes as a performer that Oscar Isaac's character sings with, a song called Please, Mr. Kennedy, which is incredible. The supporting cast is great. I know you've heard of Inside Llewyn Davis, but this is my plea to give it a shot and watch it. It was sorely underlooked and for some reason shut out of the Academy Awards. So go see it, and maybe you'll get a hint of what's going to happen in Star Wars. You won't, but it's got excellent performances and it's fantastic.
He's going to have a cat.
Yeah.
I hope that Oscar Isaac's character
Someone
has
already
a cat.
Photoshopped that picture of him carrying the cat to have the cat have a lightsaber.
I want to give that person a hug.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. The film I'll be recommending is called Frank, which hasn't come out yet, but you should keep on your radar. It stars Donald Gleason. I'm going to have to learn to pronounce his name correctly. Donald Gleason. I was going to recommend About Time, and I do recommend About Time. I just figured more people had seen it, whereas Frank, you may not know about it. I'm going to put it on your radar. This is a film that Adam and I caught at the Sundance Film Festival. Well, part of the hook is that Michael Fassbender plays Frank. He's covered by a giant papier-mâché head for most of the film. And it's still a great performance, but really, Donald Gleason is the character I feel is the lead, and he plays a guy who kind of wants to be famous, but in a really lame way. He thinks that he basically wants attention. And he plays a little bit of music. His songs are terrible. And he sort of stumbles into performing with this weird band that's led by a guy named Frank, who never takes off his paper head. It's based off a character named Frank Sidebottom. John Ronson played in the 70s with him. And so the Donald Gleason character is loosely based on John Ronson, but it's been updated to the present day, and it's really focused more on the strangeness of the band in the sense of how Donald Gleason's character thinks, oh, we have to make it big and take them to South by Southwest and be big on YouTube, and not really understanding the sort of the innate strangeness that can't really be taught. And it's such a weird film, but it's also very funny. And I just thought it was fascinating when I saw it, and I really enjoyed it a lot when I saw it at Sundance. So it's going to be a weird film, but one that I hope you'll enjoy. And it's got a great performance by Donald Gleason. So, Frank, check that out.
I hope he does some comedy in Star Wars, because he's a really gifted comedy actor.
Oh, absolutely. No, he's definitely got... He's got a lot of presence. I mean, but here's the thing, though. He's really good at comedy, but he has a scene in Calvary. He's only in one scene of Calvary, but he has this dramatic role that's... He knocks it out of the park. So he can do both. But yeah, I hope... that's the thing. That's what's exciting about these new actors. It's like, I want to see more of them. Like, you don't really know how much they... Like, it's almost like there's so much potential, and we've seen some of it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, where else can they go? Like, that's part of what makes it so exciting.
Yeah, they've all got a ton of potential. To see Adam Driver do, like, a straight villainous role, or, you know, Andy Serkis do his thing again, John Boyega. It's all very exciting.
It is. It's exciting. So I hope people, you know, hear that and don't go like, man, I just listened to these two cynical assholes talk about Star Wars for an hour. We are excited. We see the potential here. We're just... I won't speak for Adam. Cautiously optimistic.
Sure.
Let's go with that. Cautiously optimistic. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwood.
And like I said, we will be discussing The Amazing Spider-Man 2 on Sunday. So you're just going to get two podcasts pretty close together. Congrats! All right, so thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.